Accession number 18213, real one.
Bob Took, real one. Where were you born, please?
I was born in a little town near Newcastle, Birtley, in actually County Durham.
B-I-R-T-L-E-Y,
Birtley.
Which year was this?
In 1920.
Did you grow up and have your schooling in Birtley?
Yes, I did, yeah.
It doesn't sound as though you stayed there very long, because you don't sound like a northeasterner.
No, I suppose, really speaking, I came out of the army and spent most of my working life in London.
Now, how old were you when you left school in Birtley?
14-year-old, yeah.
So that would have been 34?
That's right.
Yes. Did you get a job?
I worked down the mines.
What was that like in those days?
Pretty horrific, really. My dad worked down the mines too, obviously. You know, he was a miner.
What was so horrific about it?
Well, it was working with the ponies and whatnot, you know. In the beginning, it was what they call a screening, which is picking out stone from the coal. And then I went on down, working with the ponies and the tabs, they used to call them tabs, which is coal carriers, from the face to the shaft, you know. Does that sound all right?
Yes, but what was so terrible about the job?
Well, it wasn't a very nice, bad one. I don't think it was one a nice job for a man, just a boy coming out of school, especially at that age.
Did you stay in mining very long?
No. I was only in mining for about a year.
And then what did you do?
My father had a terrific accident down the mine. And he was bedridden for about, I suppose, about 3 months. And he decided, or the doctors decided, that if he went down the mine again, it would kill him. So my sister was living down in Devon, my sister, an elder sister, and her father-in-law was a builder contractor. And father moved down to Plymouth and got a job in Plymouth. And that's how we came to be in Plymouth, the family as a family.
So you were living in Plymouth when war broke out?
Yes, oh yes.
Did you hear Neville Chamberlain declare war on Germany?
Oh, yes. Yes.
Under what circumstances?
Well, I was actually... I had been called up then. Because I was in the territorials before. About 18 months before. And we were called up before the war, actually.
Why had you joined the Territorials?
I'm afraid it's a long story. I did want to join the Navy. I actually went to the recruiting office and passed all the tests to join the Navy. And I was a bit too young at the time. And my father wouldn't sign the form, the consent form. And that was the end of the Navy.
Why wouldn't he sign it?
He didn't want me to go in any services.
Did he tell you why?
Not really. He just said, no. He just said, no, you stay at home. And that was it. But that was before the war was declared. That was about 18 months, I suppose, or 2 years, you know. And unbeknown to him, I joined the territories, which he didn't have to sign up for at that time, or he didn't have to sign.
But why were you keen to be in the services?
I don't know. I suppose at that time, youth, you wanted to do something. There wasn't a lot to do in Plymouth, not really, except cinemas and roaming round, well, swimming, that sort of thing. And I thought, well, let's see, meet people. Don't forget, I was a Geordie living in Plymouth, meeting people, and comradeship, really, you know. That was the main reason, I should imagine, you know.
Do you know when you joined the TA? About?
I've got it here somewhere.
Don't look anything up.
It was about 18 months before war was declared.
Sounds as though it was in 38 then.
Yes, yes.
Which unit of the TA did you join?
5th Devonshire. 5th Devonshire Regiment, Prince of Wales.
And what kind of training and experience did you have with them pre-war?
Well, mainly it was infantry training with Vickers machine guns. As it turned out, they became obsolete before during the war, but it was with Vickers machine guns. Infantry training, obviously, you know.
What did you think of the Vickers machine gun?
Marvellous gun, in my opinion. Although it wasn't so rapid as the German Spandau, but I think it was a marvellous gun. it's 500 rounds a minute, which was adequate, I think, for any gun. Yes.
Was it easy to use?
Well, you had to be pretty fit as a gun team. I mean, there was a three in the gun team, and you had to be pretty fit. It was pretty heavy. The tripod and the gun itself, and don't forget it was water-cooled. The Vickers machine gun was water-cooled, and of course, with water in the casing, it was pretty heavy. But the tripod was the heaviest, you know, to get into action. But you had to train with it and be in action within seconds, really.
Did you become very proficient in the use of the machine gun?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. It was, I would say the regiment itself was pretty efficient. And it was mainly men from Devon, Tavistock, Plymouth, and around that area.
Where did you meet in Plymouth?
A drill hall there. There was a big drill hall there in Plymouth, a TA. It was opposite, I don't know if you know Plymouth at all, it's opposite Ballard's. I think they've pulled that Ballard's down. It's a big community. Used to be a community centre near Mowbray Bay Docks. You know where that is, Mowbray Docks. Near there.
And what was life like in the TA pre-war?
Oh, we enjoyed it. We enjoyed it. I only went to one camp, and that was in Weymouth. Only the one camp, really. And then, as I say, they declared war, and we were called up just before they declared war.
How did you feel when you heard the news that we were at war with Germany again?
Well, I suppose, really, to a young man like that, it was an exciting time. I think myself, I mean, I was, what was I, 18-year-old, and to me, you know, it didn't really register that it could be pretty horrific. Not really, not at that time. I was a, you were a young man, just starting out on life, really. And to me, that was great, you know, great.
What happened to you next after the declaration of war?
Well, mainly we did quite a bit of defensive work. In the beginning, we did a lot of digging trenches, you know, for civilian trenches, so civilian for in case of air raid, they could go down these trenches. And then we moved out to different places around the Devon coast, defensive work, guarding defence installations like, what should we say, at Wembley. There was 9-inch guns there, a battery of 9-inch guns. I don't know if you know Wembley at all, which is by the breakwater on the left, looking out to sea on the left. We went there and did a lot of guard duty, defensive work for about 3 months, I suppose, round about that.
Towards the end of 1939?
That's right.
Was there any question of the unit going to France?
Yes, it was. We moved up from Plymouth to Midsummer Norton, if I remember correctly. Midsummer, a place called Midsummer Norton. And we did a lot of training there. And I can't remember how long we were there, but it was quite a while. We did a lot of training there, and then we moved to Salisbury Plain. And I believe from Salisbury Plain we were due to go over to France. That was the plan, I think, the higher-ups' plan, that the regiment was going to go over to France. But while we're on Salisbury Plain, training, more training, Dunkirk. So that stopped that. We didn't go to France at all.
Did you see any of the men coming back from Dunkirk?
Oh yes, quite a lot joined our regiment. You know, they came to our regiment. I'd say quite a lot. A few of them came to our regiment, NCOs, and that sort of thing.
What state were they in?
Not really. They weren't really in the state then because the door had been looked after and allocated different regiments.
Did they say anything to you about what had happened in France?
Well, just little incidents, that's all. You know, some of them really hadn't seen any action at all. It was just a matter of coming down on the beach and getting a boat home, you know.
Was their cap badge the Devonshire Regiment, or had they come from other regiments?
Other regiments, yeah. Oh, yes.
So, what happened to the unit next?
Now, we moved from there up to Kent. And I'm trying to think if it was Maidstone first. I think we moved to a place called Maidstone. That's in Kent, isn't it?
It is. Yes.
And we did more training there. And then we moved to near Seven Oaks, near Seven Oaks. That was the one battery. That was my battery. But in the meantime, we changed over to Royal Artillery.
The whole battalion?
The whole battalion, yes.
The whole battalion became part of the gunners?
That's right.
Why was that?
Because the machine gun, I presume, was obsolete, and they needed anti-tank And they just changed us completely over. We still kept our title of the Demeter Regiment, but we took the title of RA as well, because we started training on, believe it or not, French 75's gun. And we progressed from there to 2-pounders, 6-pounders, towed, this is, 17-pounder towed, and then I think it was just, I suppose it would be about a year before we went over to Normandy, we got the M10, which was mobile, 17-pounder.
The M10?
M10, yes. We called it the M10. It was called several names, really, by the different people, you know. But I think that was the official number for it, which was a Sherman chassis with a turret, open turret, by the way, on top, with a 17-pounder gun. And also had a terrific counterweight to counter the weight of the 17-pounder, which was, at the time, was the largest gun, anti-tank gun, in the British Army.
What did you think to these various anti-tank weapons with which the unit was provided with between 1940 and
44? Well, the 16-pounder, we thought it was a little bit... the 17-pounder was the gun for the German tanks, I think, because of the Tiger, the Panther, and the other Mark guns. But I think the 17-pounder was the gun to do any damage to them tanks. As you know, well, they were well-armoured, the German tanks were really well armed, and you had to get them in the right place even then to do any damage to them.
Were there any of these five types of anti-tank weapon which you didn't like, which the men had reservations about?
No, they're all quite happy about it. The only thing is, the 17-pounder was very hard to handle. You had to be fit men. You had to be strong in to handle the 17-pounder towed gun, because we had in our regiment, artillery regiment, we had 2 towed batteries and 2 M10 batteries. So that was 4 batteries altogether in the regiment, 2 towed and 2 M10. And we happened to be M10, my battery.
Were M10s self-propelled?
Oh, yes. What do you mean? Engine and... Oh, yes. Mobile. Oh, yes. It was twin engines at the back. Same as a tank. You had a turret on there that you could... what do you call it? Go round.
Rotate,
yes.
Why did you have to be fit and strong to be able to handle it?
What, the M10. Well, it's quite a lot of work to do. You besides the gun, you had maintenance of the engines, changing tracks, everything that a tank member does. It was all heavy work because, even the bogies and the tracks were all heavy, and you had to do the maintenance. The crew had to do the maintenance. They had to also train on the gun as well. You also had a radio in the M10. You had a radio operator, driver, and of course the 3 gunners.
So, to fire the gun, can you tell me the various stages that you'd go through to fire the gun?
Well, mainly find a target, and as far as we were concerned, it's anti-tank. It was a visual, and it wasn't any elevation or anything like that. It was visual. You saw your target, and you fired. You got the range, estimated range. You didn't use a range finder. The number one had to estimate the range and fire. That was the idea of it. Was an assault gun, really. Mainly, why we were in France, Normandy in France and up to Germany, was mainly visual with the anti-tank gun. I mean, the number one had to estimate the range. You could see the target and fire. And you, obviously, you could see if you hit the target or not, you know.
Did the shells have to be manhandled into the breech?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. We had a loader and a layer, what they call a loader and a layer. You had you had five crew. You had a driver, operator, what we call them, a driver operator. He had to be trained as an operator as well. Wireless, a wireless operator, number one, we called it number one, a loader and a layer. And that was the crew of an M10.
What did the layer do?
Well, he laid the gun on the target. That was his job, to lay the gun onto the target. We only ever once did an indirect shoot, what we call an indirect shoot, where you don't see a target. You just get instructions from your OP and you give the elevation and the, what do you call it?
Direction?
Yeah, direction. You get the elevation direction and then just pop the reins off until they're told to stop, sort of thing. We only ever once did that.
And what job did you have in the crew?
I was number one. I was a sergeant. I was number one in the crew, yeah.
Now, you told me that you were in Kent, in the Maidstone and Sevenoaks areas.
Yes, yes.
In 1940. Mm-hmm. Did you see anything of the Battle of Britain?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Quite a bit, really. I mean, remember the Dura bugs and V2s? Oh, yes, so quite a bit of it. Obviously, I mean, my sister lived in London at the time, and then every chance I got, I used to go up there, you know, and for the weekend sort of thing, you know, every chance you did get.
Which part of London was this that you visited?
Holloway, Camden Town. She lived in Holloway, actually.
Were you in any of the bombing in the London Blitz?
Not I can recall, not really. You know, we used to have raids sort of thing, but I was never anywhere near any bombing or anything like that, no. Not at the time.
So, in Kent, when you were in Maidstone and Sevenoaks, was it just training that you were doing?
Mainly, yes. Mainly training, that's all it was. No defensive work or anything like that. Oh, wait a minute, I've missed a spell ahead, I think. We did. This was when we were machine guns, before we went to Salisbury. We did go to Worthing, Lanton, on that coast there, and did defensive work there. And that must have been before Salisbury. We had gun posts right on the beach when the threatened invasion, you know, the threatened invasion.
What was that like?
Well, it was mainly four on, two off sort of thing, you know, at that time. It was Shoreham, Lanton, Worthing, and I think there was another place further down there, the regiment covered. That was with machine guns. I forgot all about that, actually. That was in between going to Salisbury. I forgot all about that, completely. But we spent, during the threatened invasion, we spent quite a bit there on machine gun posts. And we had what they call fixed lines on that. All you had to do was fix your gun, and that was it. And if the invasion did come, all you had to do was fire, and that was it. And poo boxes are more or less on the coast, you know.
Were you living in tents?
What, the regiment?
Yes.
Now we're more or less in billets right along the coast there.
Did you think the Germans would invade at that time?
Oh, I thought they were going to invade. It was so tense at that time, you know. We really did think they were going to invade. And don't forget, we were near Shoreham Airport. And Germans actually had to go at that airport quite a bit.
Did they do much damage?
Oh, yes, yes.
What did you think would happen if the Germans did invade? Do you think they'd be repelled, or did you think they would succeed?
Oh, I think it would be repelled, because we're at our particular area there, there's quite a defensive system there. Quite a defensive system. We had the artillery behind, you know, and infantry all behind. We were right on the beach, actually, in poo boxes. So, we either had a poo box or we made sandbag poo box. But I forgot all about that.
But at this time, did you think that Britain should come to an agreement with the Germans, or that the war should go on?
Oh, no. No, I don't think anyone thought that at all. No, I think the war should... We did at the time think the war should go on. Because of... it was propaganda, really, that the media sent out, or the radio and whatnot, sent out, that kept us going. I mean, they made us think that we were doing something for our country. We were defending our country. No doubt about that. All the young men thought the same at that time.
Did you listen to Churchill's broadcasts?
Oh, yes, quite a lot. Yes.
What effect did they have?
Oh, I think it was... it did raise the morale of the troops all around, I thought, at the time. It did.